Welcome back to Happy Porch Radio, the podcast for progressive agency owners and web professionals. Season 3 is focused on the growing number of agencies who are making the world a better place. We explore what this even means. Why is it different from any other agency? And how can it be reconciled with the real-world challenges of running a profitable agency? Join your host, Barry O'Kane, as he speaks to leaders of agencies who are driven by their values to positively impact the world around them.
My guest in this episode says she founded her agency by accident. And when you hear her story, you might see what she means. However, you may also hear, like I did, someone who is quite simply and genuinely living their own values in their business. Radish Lab is a full-service interactive creative agency focused on design for social impact. In their own words, we believe that good design and great storytelling can help change the world. They have been in business for 6 years and now have offices in New York and in Berlin. As well as sharing the story of her agency with us, Alana also shares her passionate, yet grounded in the real world, insights into the joy and the challenges of running an agency facing a conflict between pure profit and positive impact. So let's hear from Alana.
I'm Alana Rangi, and I'm the founder and principal at Radish Lab. Radish Lab was started 6 years ago in Brooklyn, and it actually kind of started accidentally and non-glamorously because I'm a Canadian and in the US I needed a work permit. I started a company so that I could make money and kind of freelance as a journalist under Radish Lab. But what ended up happening really quickly was that people were kind of curious about what I was up to and started just throwing random creative projects in my direction. And, you know, very early in the game, I started realizing that this was work that I could not do by myself. You know, people would be like, "Can you build a website?" And I'd be like, "I don't know. Give me a minute. Let me see." And one of the first people I called to help me out was Ed Wisniewski, who is my business partner and one of my business partners and an incredibly talented interactive director. And basically, once we started working together, it started to really become something, as things usually do when there's more than one person involved. And from there, we started just talking and visioning about what we could really do together if we, you know, put our heads in creative talents and combine those two. And so, you know, as we started to kind of brainstorm it and focus more on getting projects, we also started to bring into focus the kind of agency that we wanted to build if we were going to build an agency. And I think at the very core of our value system from very early on as just a team of two was this idea that if we were going to have to work, which it was clear that we were, we wanted to work with people that we thought were cool and with people that we thought were doing good work and that we could get behind, and that the natural kind of way that the social impact focus for us evolved was through that, instead of saying, "Oh, we want to work on social impact projects." It came from a place that was much more along the lines of, we just want to work with people who like give a shit about what they're doing, because we ultimately want to give a shit about what we're doing. And so from that, you know, I guess logistically, we were also in an incubator program at this time as we were kind of developing this focus, and they really kind of challenged us to articulate it maybe in a more marketable way around social impact. And there were a series of other just kind of circumstances which made that focus much easier for us to pursue. I had worked as a science journalist for a number of years in New York before starting Radish Lab. And so I had a lot of connections in the nonprofit world, in the science world, in the communications world in New York. And so I had already kind of been working with the kind of people that I wanted to continue working with. And we just started working with them in a different capacity. And from there, it just kind of grew. And yeah, now we're a 15-person agency with offices in Brooklyn and also now in Berlin. And Yeah, it's funny when I tell this story because I'm just like, I can't believe that it got so out of hand.
I think that's hilarious, this the way you describe the accidental process. But what is interesting to me as well there is that you talk about, I guess that is accidental, but you talk about it kind of happening. But during that process, when people were coming to you saying, hey, can you do this work in the early stages? And then you said, okay, well, you know, I need to bring people on. What was the motivation there? Were you still looking for, oh, this is a cool project? Or were you thinking, yeah, I can use my skills? You know, what was the underlying, why were you saying yes to those projects, I think?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I was in my kind of mid-20s and trying to make it in New York. And I didn't really know what else to do in a way. I had suddenly unmoored myself from working under organizations, which I'd done for a long time and which in many ways has its perks. You know, you have a salary and you have healthcare and you have a team of people who are kind of looking after you and collaborating with you. And suddenly I was in this place where I was like, oh crap, I have to figure this out for myself. And how am I going to make a living in New York and pay my rent and, you know, take care of myself if I don't have any work? And so I think, you know, another thing, which is just kind of part of who I am, I guess, professionally, but also personally, is that I trained as a journalist and I worked that way for a number of years. But deep down inside me, I never really had the fire that really great journalists have to chase the story and really kind of go after those narratives and the truth and the facts and that sort of stuff. I was always more driven by finding ways to express ideas creatively and, yes, tell stories, but more solve problems and not necessarily completely objectively, like just kind of go for it. So in starting, you know, a creative agency, quote unquote, where I could freelance journalistically, and I started, you know, kind of being offered more creative work around the lines of like, oh, can you build a website or could you help us like do this animated film or, you know, can you help us write some copy for this report? Like it was a complete range of weird stuff that people wanted help with and for some reason sought me out or trusted me as a friend or something like that. But I think that in many ways it felt good for me as kind of a young professional to be like, oh, I guess I don't have to fit in this box of journalism. I can actually be more flexible in terms of applying what I feel my true skill set is, which is really problem solving and in a creative way, to all of these different things. And that's pretty much what I feel like I've been doing full time for the last 6 years.
That to me sounds like the crux of it. There was a reason people were coming to you. That's what I guess why I was trying to work that out of that in that previous question. You know, if you're talking about having that passion, that interest, that would have communicated, I imagine, and therefore to the quality of the work as well. I think that's really interesting. Because a lot of us do set up, you know, hey, I can do stuff, but then they don't get that trickle and it slowly builds over time of people, you know, hey, you should go and work with so-and-so. So then the next stage, so then you've got all this happening and you're starting to build a team. What led you to the incubator? Was that a conscious decision again, or was that just another step in this sort of journey that was happening?
It was conscious, and I have to say it was 100% driven by Ed, who throughout the whole lifespan of this business has been the one who can see, he's kind of like playing the long game chess game, you know, where it's like he can really see how making a move now will affect something in the future in a way that I can't. I'm kind of always like triaging whatever is happening on the ground at the moment. And I've got like an overall vision for the thing I want to build and the way I want to feel, but I am not tactical, which in many ways makes me a bad businesswoman. But Ed is like the polar opposite. And so actually like very early on, you know, we were just working remotely, emailing each other, talking on the phone. And when Ed at after the first year officially quit his job, which he had been double billing at for Radish Lab, to really like get into this with me, that's when things became really real. And we were like, oh crap, I guess we better get some sort of workspace, but how will we ever afford that? And what a big investment. And Ed found this like co-working space that was opening up, and we applied in to this incubator program that was brand new, funded by the city, all around kind of digital storytellers in New York. We were the first tenants in that program. And It was one of those moves that was in many ways serendipitous, because a lot of stars in the universe aligned to just like be like, oh, this makes perfect sense. But it was really driven by Ed, who I think knew that at that point, if we wanted to really move forward, we needed to work together in the same space, be supported by a community of other people working on creative storytelling and who had obviously connections and probably a hell of a lot more experience than we did, and root ourselves around like this idea of having a serious place of business, you know, where we could actually like have clients, which is something that when you don't have an office, you're constantly going to somebody else's office all the time and kind of being like, oh yeah, we have an office, but you just can't see it. It's great. So it was this kind of natural next step, which I didn't see, but it was very much on Ed's radar. And
what you're describing there sounds like a really strong partnership as well, like different skill sets and being complementary.
Yeah, I have to say, like, you know, there are real days and weeks and months where I'm like, oh my God, this is so much work. It's so hard. Why do I do this? I just want to like shut this down and like go get a regular job or open a bed and breakfast or do something that's like less client services and stressful all the time. But I cannot express how lucky I am and we are to have a business that is run by friends and people who like really respect each other and have fun with each other and complement each other in kind of a skill set way. You know, Ed and I are excellent business partners, but also best friends on many levels. And we can really support each other in a way that is, and be very honest with each other in a way that I feel like a lot of business relationships don't sustain. And then our third partner, Adam, is also actually my partner. That is, I think many people see that as extremely challenging, to work with your partner who you also, you know, cook dinner with and eat breakfast with and all that stuff. But it's such an interesting, intense, rewarding experience to go so deeply into these human relationships, working on such a complex problem and building this amazing thing together, that, you know, no matter what happens down the road, I feel so lucky to have kind of aligned with these people in my life to work on this project, because it would not be as fun without them, or as successful for sure.
Yeah, that does sound amazing. And I can hear the genuineness in what you're saying there as well, rather than it being a surface thing you say about the team. And I totally want to come back to that. But just before that, I want to go back a little bit in the conversation to the part at which you started to clearly articulate the social impact, focus of the agency, that being the focus of this season of the show. I wanted to, first of all, though, because you kind of described it as like, you know, the incubator were encouraging you or getting you to articulate the identity of the agency, or however we want to describe that. But it also sounded like it didn't just, the social impact didn't just start then. It was something that you were interested in. And am I right to saying that? It was something that you had, even before the agency, it was an area of interest for you?
Yeah, I guess, you know, it's funny because now it's such a buzz thing. Like, we have people write to us every week and they're like, we want to work for you, or, you know, I want to work for you. I just want to, you know, work on social projects that have meaning and like be involved in a change movement. And I think, kind of like you said at the beginning, there's a whole vocabulary around it that, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, I didn't have, and I don't even know if it existed in the same way, because it's been kind of such a new thing that's really flooded millennials. I don't know what the word is, like this whole kind of new purpose-driven work society. And I think at the core, what I knew was that I have very strong beliefs around what I think is right and what I think is unethical and what I think is good business and what I think is fair. And that, to me, that is really the only way to go about things. And so you can start an agency and work with ExxonMobil and make a shit ton of money, but I just like would never consider that an option. It was just never something that I wanted to do. And also this whole idea of like, yes, I want to have meaning to the work that I do, but mostly it's also just feeling good about it, knowing that you're contributing in some way that plays off your own sense of what's good and right. And so I'm not saying that working for ExxonMobil is bad if that's what you believe in, but I had this kind of fundamental belief system that I was working off of, which was like, well, these are the kind of people that we want to work with, and these are the kind of people that we don't want to work with. And I don't really know exactly where that came from, aside from kind of how you're brought up and your politics and your city that you live in and the kind of people that you're exposed to. And I think that, you know, New York is a certain place where there's a lot of people thinking about the future and trying to make change and, you know, collaborating in a way that is really centered around trying to push things forward. And it's also a city where there's a lot of people who are just trying to make money, and that never really interested me, although it sounds nice. I think there was something where I felt deep down, and I know that Ed felt this too, and he has children, which also I think for him really shifted the way we were thinking about this, because he was like, for the first time, I really understood that it wasn't about me. It was about trying to help contribute to make the world some way a better place, as cheesy as that sounds. And building websites does not make the world a better place, but the way we've always seen it is that we can facilitate and support clients by choosing who we work with, so that the people who we believe are doing the right kind of work are enabled, you know, to better achieve and fulfill their missions, or, you know, get more funding. I don't know, whatever their kind of end goal is. And so I think when the incubator was kind of challenging us to say, well, that's cool that you guys want to like work with people that you think are meaningful, but like, how do you put a label on that? Or how do you really market it? What are you going to say? What, like, how do you pitch what you're doing in, you know, a concise and clear, in a concise and clear way? And so the social impact focus was one of those things where, and to this day, we take it very broadly. Like, I mean, it's a definition that it's not like we work exclusively with nonprofits of, you know, with a budget of over $500,000 a year. It's like, social impact for us is like, it can be anything from, you know, a jewelry company that's like sourcing their materials from communities that are, you know, being ethically supported by, you know, I don't, you know, or it can be something that's like huge, and it can be like a museum that is not necessarily promoting any kind of real change, but it's making people's lives better because it's kind of contributing to this overall culture of a city. And I think for us, the idea of social impact is about really thinking deeply about the world that we want to live in, and that takes many shapes and forms, and that it's, we don't measure other people's impact. We're not like, do you guys have enough impact for us to want to work with you? We really look to see if the people who are running the organization have their head in the right place. As much as, and that's a subjective thing. You know, that's something that we decide as an agency, and you know, that's also a decision on our side where we have kind of collectively decided what that means and choose clients based on that.
That's an interesting point to question you a little bit more about, if that's okay. I ask this question of everybody in this season. Do you have that process codified? Do you have it written? Or is it just a case of, on case-by-case basis, oh, this feels right?
It feels right. And I think as much as I would love to codify it, I don't think it can be. And I also don't know if we... I'm trying to think. I would love to be able to say that, you know, that we would be able to like exclusively only take on a very specific type of client all the time. But we work predominantly with nonprofit organizations and cultural organizations whose budgets generally are not great. And so we're kind of constantly struggling up against the financial side of running an agency while also trying to make ethical and kind of moral decisions about the kinds of clients that we work with, which is like a weird balance. We are working now on, we're really close to kind of finalizing the B Corp application process. Are you familiar with the B Corp stuff?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a thing that's really challenged us as a small business to articulate some of these things in a way that maybe were much more feeling based before. But for us, it's a feeling. And, you know, it usually starts with our business development team, and they have a really good spidey sense about the kinds of clients and projects that we're interested in and that we want to pitch for. If there's ever a question, you know, they'll usually send a project around and be like, hey, does anyone have any thoughts on this? Does this seem like something we should pitch for? And we'll have a discussion about it. And it's always hard to tell when you're pitching for a project what it's going to shake out to be. And so there's always some variance in there. But really, yeah, it's a feeling. I don't know. That's a very unsatisfying answer, but
I think it is a tough question. So it's not an uncommon type of in the tiny bit of thinking and conversations I've had so far. But what's interesting to me as well is that you sort of touched on what I think is the crux of this part of the conversation, is that challenge between the commercial realities of running an agency, running a business, and needing to be profitable and pay everybody and look after everything, and the reality of many of the people working in the broader social impact third sector, or even just trying, you know, in the more, if you define that beyond in a very broad terms, there's often perceived to be a real conflict between the two. Do you find that you are making or having from time to time to make compromises, to make decisions at which directly, you know, where there's those two factors are directly competing?
Yes, all the time. I mean, we are, as I'm sure you know, like running a business is like trying to keep like 700 juggling balls in the air at the same time. And running a small business is even worse. And so, and the other thing that's really interesting is like the older the agency gets, the less pronounced these problems are. And I think that that is kind of the way that the agency world works, is the longer you're in the field, the easier, quote, easier things get as you're kind of establishing relationships with clients who give you more and more business, and you've got a better reputation and a bigger portfolio. And it just, you know, you've had people who've been working for you longer and all of this stuff. So it does in many ways become easier, but you know, we are working at keeping these 700 balls in the air at the same time. And there's a few like key weighted factors that we are constantly kind of playing with to see how we can get the most balanced equation, I guess, in feeling good about the work we do, paying our people well, growing in a way that is sustainable and safe, and also like continuing to evolve the business and think about new ideas. And so, you know, one of our biggest challenges is that we're in one of the most expensive cities in the world where, you know, we just cannot compete with agency salaries. We just can't do it. It's impossible given the kind of clients that we work with. And that's been in many ways like a huge hurdle for us because we, and not something that we've completely resolved, because we have a difficult time, you know, paying, for instance, like for development talent, which is just, it's insanely expensive here. But at the same time, what's interesting is that we never have a shortage of people who want to work for us based on the value proposition. And so for us, it's a combination of like trying to figure out how to offer people both a kind of cultural and professional and financial situation, you know, at an office where they can feel really engaged and fulfilled and committed to the work that they're doing, but also, you know, be okay with not making a six-figure salary because it's not something that we can sustain given that our product budgets are smaller and tighter. And, you know, the talent is always kind of, I mean, I think for me, especially running a business that is what I would like to think kind of people focused, that's probably one of the hardest things, is feeling like we can't just give people what we think that they deserve all the time. We're always kind of constantly like doing the math and figuring out exactly how to fit that puzzle together. But at the same time, then we're looking at the clients that we're bringing in. And I actually think that at this point in the business, when we were younger, we were definitely taking on projects that were, quote, off-brand, you know, and just be like, let's just do this because, you know, it's $80,000 and we just need the money. And you know, we're not going to feel great about the work, but it's also not the worst work that we could be doing. So let's just do it. And now we really don't do that as much anymore. There are definite projects that we take on where we're like, this one's going to be difficult. And in an ideal world, we might not work on it. But for the most part, from a value proposition and from, I don't know, from I guess kind of the social impact brand aspect of what we're trying to do, we are really trying to focus on exclusively taking those type of projects. But it's like a balance scale. You know, you do have to feed the pipe so that you can pay your people. And it's also, as you know, a very interesting time in the United States where people are losing a lot of funding and there's a bit of a panic around spending on frivolous things like creative. And so, yeah, times are changing and we're also trying to adapt our thinking and, you know, expand our business in different ways to Europe and that sort of thing to also try and balance the scales a little to make things easier.
How often do you say no to leads or projects or pitches based on the values?
A lot. Yeah. I mean, there's a whole like spectrum of different types of projects. There's ones that are really small. There are ones that are really big. There are ones that are short, ones that are long, ones that are complex, ones that are easy. And then there's like a whole combination of all of those factors kind of together. And so I would say like we are constantly turning away smaller projects that people are reaching out to who just like haven't like really read about what we do. I'm like, do you like know that this is not something we would work on? But, you know, we have a proposal team whose full-time job it is to kind of research and find great projects for us to work on, you know, if the projects aren't coming to us via referral or something like that. But, you know, we're sifting through like databases and pages of RFPs where we're not pitching for 95% of them. We're pitching for, you know, the one or two projects that we find in there that are, you know, that feel magical, where you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this library, you know, wants a new website. That's so exciting. And it's nerdy stuff. But yeah, that's the thing is if we wanted to pivot and lose the social impact focus, it would be very easy to do from like a business perspective. But I think we would have a hard time doing it from a value perspective.
And I've got so many questions I want to ask you. Do you think you had to go through the sort of semi-compromised decisions that you described earlier or when the agency was, you know, younger and less mature? Do you think you had to make those decisions, or if you were to go back to the same situation again, or do you think you could be a little bit more purely like narrow focused?
I I can't imagine it having gone any other way. I mean, I think you need money to run a business and you need money to stabilize growth and you need, it's really all about cash flow, which is like, I hate talking about the finances of business, but that's really what it's about when you're running a small business is cash flow. And so, you know, when you're small, and the other thing about Radish is that I started the company because I like did not have a job. So I also did not have any money and I did not have any investors. I had like $500 in my bank account and I was like, crap, I really got a freelance. And so it was bootstrapped with like $0. And that has been the way that we have operated from the very beginning. We do not have any investments or loans. We are living off what we make. And that's a choice also, which is somewhat strategic and also just somewhat the way that it shook out, because this was in a way unplanned. But because of that situation, I do think that you have to make business decisions. And those we continue to make throughout the life of this business, which are purely business decisions. And sometimes they are really difficult to make, uncomfortable to make, and don't make you feel good. But you have to do them because it's not all about what you want all the time. You're making decisions on behalf of an organization or a group of people. And so in the early phases of the business, when, you know, we were really focused on marketing social impact, but taking on some off-brand projects to just make sure that we could afford to not take on second jobs, I think that was really important. And it was also us saying, no, we know we can do this. We just need a little more time. Build up a portfolio of projects that we can show off in this field. And, you know, it was about kind of buying time. And now we've got that kind of banked away, which is great. And we also have a different reputation and a different kind of client portfolio and a history of people who continue to give us work, which is amazing. And so now it's that has paid off. But I think we always knew that that was something that we wanted to stop doing. We just needed to do it in the short term.
Yeah, great answer. So now in the current, as you say, with the reputation and the presence you have within the agency, Do you find that when you are in those pitching situations that having sort of chosen that product, that project, if for example going into a pitch or the client coming to you, do you find that makes you stronger and like more likely to win the pitches?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's always a competitive, it's usually a competitive process, which, you know, you never know what the factors are that you're up against. But I think there are like a few real strengths that we have when it comes into just like getting business. And, you know, one is that we do, it's partly tactical, but it's also very honest, which is that we do choose the clients that we work with. And yeah, we need to fill the pipeline and we can't just be like, man, we don't feel like working on that. You know, we're taking on projects and we're working on them. And some of them are less awesome than others, but they're all projects that we've said yes to. And clients like to hear that. And they like to know that you're invested in what they're doing. But I think the other thing that really helps is now we've really got a portfolio of work for organizations that are, you know, of course, all different, but actually also really all the same. Like there's incredible patterns in the nonprofit world and in the cultural worlds and in the academic worlds that are, you know, hierarchical and bureaucratic and lack of resources. And, you know, there are boards and advisory councils and just like all of these obstacles that we encounter almost in every single project that we now know how to manage. And we've developed workflows around those things. And we know the questions to ask to navigate them and to really guide and shepherd the client through the process. And so now pitching for projects is so much more based on kind of like, don't worry, we like know what we know how to do this instead of we really care about what you do, which is also important. But, you know, I think that the last thing that really has worked for us from the very beginning is being like just very like honest and genuine and open about who we are as people and why we want to work with certain clients and why we're doing the work that we're doing. And also just trying to be nice to people. I mean, that's like, it's crazy, but like, there are so many not nice people that you can work with in the world. And I do not understand how those people get business. I don't. And we've had the funniest experience going to Germany because everybody's like, wow, you guys are so nice. And I'm like, who are you guys normally working with? Gosh, this must be so painful for you because it's not, I don't really know another way to be, but I think that it's like been a tactic, or it's not even a tactic. It's just been something that's worked like in our favor the whole time, which is just kind of saying like, yeah, we like actually just want to work with people who are nice and be nice to them back and go through the creative process together. And that's really like been, that's my biggest business secret revealed.
Outstanding. Released here for the first time kind of thing.
Oh no, now everyone knows.
So actually, that's quite a good segue to the other topic I'd like to come. You were talking earlier very passionately about the team, the partnership, but also the team. And you've mentioned a couple of times that people want to work in this environment, or you know, whether that's working specifically with your agency or doing social impact work. I'm not sure if you meant one or both. But I guess an observation I want to make as a question is you talked at the start about you just having this is the way that you sort of values, you know, this is how business should work. And this is just, it wasn't like you made a conscious decision. It was just, this is who you are, very genuinely. Have you found that is, you know, is that why the team thing is so important to you and why people want to be part of it and why you're able to do that mix of work with people who are willing to make compromises on money?
Yeah, that's a good question. I, like, to this day, am just, like continue to be amazed that people want to work for the company that I started. Like I'm just like, are you sure? Are you sure? Okay. All right. It is truly humbling and it's also scary. But what's cool is that I think, and this has come from a few like key influencers and mentors in my life before I started Radish, but in addition to this core of like feeling like I just want to work with people, work with clients that I like, there's this basis of wanting, like believing that it is possible to build a company that treats its people well and whose team really feels truly collaborative and really like enjoys each other's company and wants to have a drink together after work and can support each other when, you know, someone's going through a breakup or like whatever the deal is. I believe that you can work in a different way than a lot of companies are structured. And I don't think that Radish does it perfectly, but I think we're working towards something like that, which is to say we have a professional value system, which we actually have articulated on paper in terms of kind of what the team aligns around kind of in a mission, vision, value sense. And that is something that people can really get behind and want in their day-to-day work. And that's good. And I can understand that. And then, you know, the other thing that we're really working on with the people who work here is this idea of like, well, what else is your job aside from sitting in front of the computer for, you know, 7 hours a day, 8 hours a day? What else can your job be? And what else can your workplace be? And how do you create a community and a family and a place that you feel welcome in and you feel able to contribute in and you feel stimulated by? And again, it's like, it's still a job. It's like not ever going to be the best thing ever. But I think that that's another thing that really has worked well for us in terms of genuinely drawing people into what we're doing, because it is an invitation to really contribute and to show up and be a part of this thing that we're trying to build together. And so I think while, you know, Ed, Adam, and I have always had vision for this business, and maybe I just speak the loudest so people listen to me, I think that really the ethos and the heart of the business comes from these people who show up and kind of align around the same ideas and want really the same thing from their jobs and their lives, you know, so that when we go to kind of create a day, it ends up feeling really good. That sounds like very full of shit, but
quite the opposite. I think we've just hit on a topic I would love to do a whole other episode on. But one question though, do you think that process and all of the things you talked about there, and that I really love what you were saying about what else can your work be and making it somewhere where people aren't just, you know, dreading Monday mornings. But do you think that very closely connected to the type of work, like to the being saying we want to work with social impact and have this sort of broader impact with the work we do, are those things, how closely are those things connected for you?
I think they're pretty connected. It's also hard for me to articulate that because I am in this in a whole other way, you know, like I think it would be really interesting to also talk to people who work for social agencies instead of run them, because like, I'm sure anyone who runs a business will tell you that like, there are moments where you feel really stuck. There are moments where you feel like, oh my God, get me out of here. Like, this is crazy. Why am I doing this work? And that it's not for me about showing up to work. Like that's not, unfortunately or fortunately, what I feel like. I feel like, oh my God, this is this thing that I started and now I have to take care of it and nurture it and think about it and strategize. And that it's, yes, it's my job and it's how I make money, but it's also like at the core of my being now, for better or worse. And I hope that people who work here don't feel that way about their job here. I don't believe that people need to feel that way about work to have a fulfilled life. But I hope that how they feel about Radish is that they get the best of both worlds, which is this kind of challenging and engaging and, you know, focused and value-driven work that they get to kind of execute and collaborate on and think about and get excited about and complete and launch and, you know, be proud about. But then they also get to contribute to this other thing, which is like, oh, I also have this opportunity to help build a business, and that I can contribute in a real way to helping, you know, the management and the leadership of the company understand what that looks like. So I do think that the two things are super connected, but that for me, it's maybe hard to articulate because I can't quite separate them in the same way. I have ideas about what that might be like.
Yeah, that's really insightful and lots to think about. But unfortunately, we're starting to run out of time. I've got one last question I want to ask you, and that's looking to the future. What's the next steps? Where with you and with Radish?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, a lot is moving around for us right now. We have a newly opened office in Berlin, and we have a bunch of new team members in Brooklyn, which is really exciting. And because we're a small team, that really affects the dynamic and the makeup of kind of the energy and the brains that we have kind of thinking about problems. You know, we are a company that always wants to stay small. And that is, you know, there to us, I think, are a lot of benefits to always knowing who you're working with, kind of knowing what their skill sets are, knowing how you can trust them, and getting really familiar with the way that we work together across time zones and, you know, across offices. But I think, you know, one of the things that we're really working on in Europe is starting to build out more of like a consulting arm and a workshop arm, which is less focused on the actual execution of work, which is great. And we've done that for a long time. But now we feel like we've got all of this knowledge and these ideas around the social impact, nonprofit, cultural, educational space, because we've been working in this field very intensely for the last 6 years. And what we'd like to do is bring also that the American kind of experience is something that is, I think, truly unique and very different than the European experience. And so in Europe, we're really expanding into this idea of kind of idea sharing and workshopping and aligning teams and strategizing based on the expertise and the knowledge that we have. And that's been going really well and is really interesting to kind of help organizations and agencies solve problems that are a little bit more kind of on paper or intellectual than kind of saying, okay, we're going to build this website for you. And then in Brooklyn, you know, I think we continue to really look for opportunities to take on more of the projects that we really want to work on and fewer of the projects that are like, oh, that's a pain in the butt. I think another thing that we are trying to do is really kind of now create a new leadership structure in Brooklyn that can kind of inject new energy and new ideas into the business, because founders lose steam and you get tired, and you also, it's hard to come up with new ideas when you're busy solving problems on the ground all the time. And so now what I'm really interested in is how can we bring people into the business and invite them to basically make it new again, or to kind of bring some fresh blood in here so that we are not always challenged with coming up with what's next in that way, but that we can support whatever, you know, whatever leaders or management that we bring in kind of seeing their vision through and coaching them on what shape that's going to take, but that we invite some new ideas in here, because I think that's also kind of part of continuing to, I don't know, just stay new and stay interesting and stay interested, is kind of bringing in new people so that it's not always on you to think of what's next.
Yeah, wow. Thank you so much. As I said,
you're welcome. I'm sorry. This is like a therapy session.
But it's, for me, it's really valuable, really interesting, and I hope to the listeners as well. So thank you so much. I really appreciate that. There's so much more I would like to have dug into, but just out of time. Very final question. If anybody who is listening wants to go and find a little bit more about Radish Lab and the work you do, where should we point them to?
You can learn more about Radish Lab at radishlab.com or radishlab.de. And you can always send us an email at hello@radishlab.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much again.
Thanks, Barry.
You can get all the links and notes from this episode on happyporchradio.com, where you can also find out how to send us questions, feedback, and get involved in the conversation about this series. If you enjoyed the show, please share with anyone else who might enjoy it too. Thanks for listening.